Welcome to the next Singing and Slaying podcast. My name is Peter Jones. It's been a while since I've been able to record. My normal recording session was when my kids were at piano. Well, it's July and the summer break is upon us and my kids do not go to piano anymore. So this microphone is so fantastic. It picks up all the noise all around the house. And so if the kids aren't out of the house, I have a little trouble recording. Anyway, so I'm getting back into this, finding some time. They're going swimming once a week, which should help me generate some time to get in front of the microphone and record some things. Today, I want to talk about the value of historical studies. I'm a big history buff. I probably got that from my father. My father studied especially military history, World War II and Vietnam in particular. But I've transferred that into ecclesiastical or church history, and I read a lot of church history. And what is the value of studying history? Of all the disciplines that have gone by the wayside, and many of them have, of all the disciplines that have gone by the wayside, history might be one of those that is the weakest for most Americans, especially younger Americans, do not know or understand their history. And churchgoers don't understand church history either. And this is really a problem. It's a failing, and it leaves us with some serious deficits in our understanding of where we came from. Imagine your own life. Imagine if you had no clue who your mother, your father was. If your memory was entirely erased. Imagine you're 40 years old, and your memory from 0 to 20 is entirely erased. Think how your life would be different. How hard it would be to understand who you are and where you came from. Well, for many of us, that's exactly what we do with church history, or what we do with the history of our church culture or our denominations or whatever the case may be. We just don't know where we've come from at all. So I'm not going to give you a history lesson. I'm going to tell you why you should study history this morning, or this in this podcast, explain to you why you should study history. And there's just a few points I want to make. First, obviously, studying history gives you facts. Facts are important things. Who did what, when they did it, how they did it, who won what battles, who wrote what books, who was in a certain spot at a certain time. Those things are really important for understanding what happened and why it happened. And so really, at the very simple level, studying history gives you facts. I remember several years ago, I was doing a series on the minor prophets, and I went through and I studied the history of Israel. I studied the chronology of Israel, what happened when. I looked at the Egyptian and the Assyrian and the Persian and the Babylonian empires and the Greek empires and how all this wove together. And that really helped me when I read Ezra, Nehemiah, Malachi, Amos, and all those different, all those aren't minor prophets. Read the minor prophets, read Ezra, Nehemiah. It really helped me to understand what was going on in those particular situations because I understood the facts. And most of us, not only do we not know how to analyze history, we don't even know what happened. We don't know what happened when. I mean, we might know, okay, Abraham Lincoln, Civil War, George Washington, founder of our country, but what about these other guys? Who was Woodrow Wilson? You know, what did Andrew Jackson do? And going on back even further, why did the Revolution happen? Why did the Pilgrims come over here? What happened in the Reformation? What happened in the Renaissance? What happened in the Middle Ages? How did the gospel and how did civilization move from Rome outward to Germany and to those places over there? We don't even have a chronology. And honestly, if you don't have a chronology and you don't know who did what when, you really cannot understand history. If you don't know that Luther preceded Calvin and that Beza came after Calvin and Turretin came after Calvin, if you don't know the Westminster Assembly was in the mid-1600s, and you don't know Calvin died in 1560 and therefore they separated almost 100 years, if you don't understand that fact, okay, 80 to 100 years, if you don't understand that fact, it really makes it difficult to interpret these sorts of things and understand these sorts of things. Not impossible, but certainly hard. So the first value of history, studying history, is just it gives you facts. It helps you understand what's going on. This is one of the reasons, if I can pull a plug here, one of the reasons I really love Veritas Press's History and Bible Cards. They walk you through the key events, the key times in history, and kind of help you get a flow of history from Adam all the way to today. So that's the first thing. Second, studying history helps remind you that things are not simple. We live in a bumper sticker age, a meme age, Hey, I want to slap a quote on a cool picture and put it on Facebook age. And therefore, we like things simple. We like them easy. Well, history is not simple and easy. Right now, I'm reading a book by Richard Mueller, who's a Calvin scholar, and he's talking about how Calvin's views came to be, and also how those views have been interpreted afterwards. And usually what happens with people is they'll go back and they will make a simplistic reading of a historical event without understanding the whole context. And understanding the whole context and what had happened before, what comes after, what was the person going through, those sorts of things is very difficult. It is not easy. I remember one man, I can't remember who said this, but he said, I read 15 books about a time period before I assume I know what's going on. 15 books. That means that's a lot of reading about one time period. He's not talking about 15 history books. He's talking about 15 books about World War II or 15 books about the Civil War. Before he understands, he assumes he has some grasp of what's going on. Most of us read a meme and we assume we have a grasp of what's going on. Okay. So the studying history helps you realize things are a lot more complex than you think they are. Therefore, to go from an easy cause and effect, well, this happened, therefore this, is really foolish and not wise. Okay. So that's the second thing. Third thing is, history helps us put men in their context. Now, that's similar to what I said before about cause and effect and things not being simple, but a little different. Calvin was not a 1800s Southern American, okay? He wasn't. Calvin was a 1500, he lived in the 1500s. And the reason I use Calvin is because he's the guy I know most about, by the way, historically, but he lived in the 1500s. He came at the end of the Middle Ages with humanistic and humanism in a good way studies. He came with all this learning. He was a man of his time. And if you forget that, if you forget he is a man of his time, then it's very easy to take your own ideas and foist them onto Calvin or to Spurgeon or to Edwards or to Abraham Lincoln or to George Washington or anybody else, okay? So studying history helps you understand, okay, here's what was happening, here's what was going on, here's the way people thought, therefore that is why they did this, or that is why that happened, okay? So you really want, studying history helps you keep things in context. There's such a gap, a huge gap, between us and these people in the past. And that gap is not unbridgeable. But if you approach it like there isn't a gap, and like Calvin was just like you, and Luther was just like you, and the people living in Georgia in the 1800s were just like you, well, you're going to run into some problems, okay? So it teaches you to look at people in context, okay, instead of just ripping things out of context. Even going back to the early 1900s, I mean, again, there's a world of difference between living in 1916 and 2016, a world of difference, really, okay? And that brings me to my last point, okay? So you study church history because of the facts. You study church history because it keeps you from believing everything was simple cause and effect. You study church history because it allows you to put men and events in their context. But the last thing you do, and this is kind of where we go, and it's an important part of it, is you study church history because you can take those situations and learn from them. Okay. Now, I just said there's a big gap between us and people in the past, and there is, but there's also a lot of things that are exactly the same. Sin, righteousness, nobility, holiness, justice, God, those things do not change. Okay. So people commit adultery in Geneva. People rape people in Geneva. People stole from people in Geneva. People blaspheme God in Geneva. And you can go through any time period in history and find these sorts of things happening. And even pagan cultures, Rome and Greece, how did these cultures apply principles? How did these cultures apply principles to their specific situation? Okay. So what you can do there is learn from the past. You can look at Spurgeon and what he did in London and how he cared for the poor. And you could say, well, you know what? I cannot recreate Spurgeon's area. I can't. You don't want to try to take Calvin or Spurgeon or Edwards or Augustine or any of those guys and say, I want to recreate that situation. A lot of us love to do this. We have this sort of nostalgic leaning where we go and we recreate. We want it to be just like that, just like the South in 1855 before the Civil War. That's why it's not going to be that way. It's never going to be like that. It's not going to be like the 1950s. It's not going to be like the 1850s or the 1650s or the 1350s or the 550s. It's never going to be like that. So trying to recreate the situation and make it look like that is folly and a waste of time. But what you can do is you can go, okay, how can we learn from these men? Because people have the same types of problems. They have the same issues. Nothing is new. It is not new. The technology is new. The uses, okay? They didn't kill people, each other with guns in the 550s, but they still killed each other. They still murdered one another. How did the church and how did the governments deal with that, okay? And they didn't have internet porn in Geneva, okay? But they had brothels and sexual immorality and kids wanting to fornicate. How do they deal with that, all right? So we can go and learn from those situations. And as long as you understand the difference in context, and as long as you understand the difference between principle and application, you can learn from it. So let me just give you one example here as I close. I read a great book by Robert Kingdon and John Witt on sex and marriage in Calvin's Geneva. Kind of a nerd's book. Loved it. Thought it was great. But they talk all about how courtship happened, what were the laws governing marriage, and things like that. Okay, so a couple, if they fornicated before they married, okay, they were engaged or whatever, but they slept together before they were married with each other, not with other people, but with each other, they were required to confess that sin at their wedding. Okay, confess that sin at their wedding. And the bride also could not wear a veil. Okay, if she had been sexually immoral, had sex at all, she could not wear a veil. Okay, so in our context, you don't want to say, I want to recreate Geneva here. You don't want to necessarily just bring it over one to one. But the point is, a sin was committed that violated certain principles, and they needed to confess their sin, and there needed to be a symbolic representation that that sin had happened, okay? Because their wedding day wasn't like every other wedding day, okay? They were married, but they were not virgins. They had not kept themselves pure. Okay. You might say, well, isn't that mean? Isn't that cool? Maybe it is. And maybe we look at Calvin and Geneva and we say, we don't want any part of that. We think it's fine if they confess their sins to the Lord and to their pastor or to their friends. And in private, we don't need any public display of confession. But maybe we want to think about that. You know, maybe we want to say, well, if a couple fornicates or sleeps together before they're married, they need to say something at their wedding. Something needs to be said or something needs to be written. Or maybe it doesn't have to be something that they're wearing. Maybe there's some other way to do it. But when you read that, it forces you to step back and think about it again. Because for us, we don't care. I mean, a couple sleep together, sure, whatever. Who really cares? They're getting married. Doesn't really matter. Okay. Well, it mattered to Calvin's Geneva. It can matter, and it mattered to other societies as well, not just Calvin's. So the question is, do we need to have something like that? And when you study history, it forces you to ask those types of questions. Not principles for us as Christians. We know fornication is wrong. But what it forces you to do is ask application. Okay, well, what do we do about that? You know, just one other example from this book that I read by Kingdon and Witt. They would often, if a visitor came into town and kind of got into town and wanted to start a business and set himself up and those sort of things, they would often inquire into the town he came from as to what kind of character he had. Did he have a wife that he had abandoned? Did he have children he had abandoned? Was he a known thief or known philanderer? Okay, so they would, in a sense, do a background check on the guy when he came into town. Again, is that something we need to do exactly like that? Well, probably not, but there are some principles there. Basically, Geneva didn't want a bunch of scoundrels moving into town without them knowing about it. And again, communities can't necessarily do that. Sometimes they can. You got to be cautious with different laws. But certainly as churches, if somebody moves from one church to another, we can call the pastor or send them an email and say, hey, listen, what was this person like? What was his character like? And that's not gossiping, slandering, digging up dirt. That is protecting your people as a pastor or as a civil magistrate. Okay. So anyway, the point is, a little long-winded here, long than I wanted to go, but the point is, you can learn from history, and I encourage you, greatly encourage you to study church history and regular history too, not just church history. I'm going to study lots of history. Study history, learn from it, learn the context, learn what's happening, learn your facts, know when things occurred, and it will keep you from being a fool. It'll keep you from looking at situations with a naive eye, and you will be able to learn and grow from the things you see in the past and the things people say, and also be able to sort for the wheat from the chaff when people are saying things. People say something about Calvin or Luther or Edwards or Whitfield or Billy Graham, whoever it is, and you're like, no, it didn't happen that way. Then you're one step up in the game, and you're able to understand what's happening and understand who's lying or who hasn't done their research and who has. Anyway, so my encouragement there is just read the script, read church history. Read church history, read regular history, learn from the past. It's surely one of the greatest deficits that we have as a people, especially as a young people. Well, that's all I got today. My name is Peter Jones again. This is the Singing and Slaying podcast, and you can find me at singingandslaying.com, or you can find me on iTunes and or Facebook if you want to poke around and find me there. Hope you enjoyed it, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks. Bye.